Recorded Books and RB Digital present Killing Gravity by Corey J. White. Narrated by Saskia Malleveld. Chapter 1. Trying to comprehend a whole star system while my ship bleeds atmosphere? There are worse ways to die. Control panels glow in fuchsia panic, low, steady hiss of oxygen. I'm floating in what used to be the cockpit of the battered Oxoneer-class Corvette I called home these past few years. Now it's a coffin with ambient lighting, adrift in the void. Seven crawls into my helmet and gets fur up my nose. I feel like I'm being smothered, but can't get too angry with her. She probably just wants to make sure I'm still breathing. With Seven blocking my mouth, the condensation on the inside of my helmet starts to clear. I can see out the viewport, where the local system has pulled out all the stops. One bright star and five planets hang in space, with a shimmering silver sphere just off the bow, orbited by debris. All these celestial bodies look carefully arranged, like they're trying to tell me something. Fuchsia flicks over to light blue as a message comes through the comms. Distress signal response. Assistance incoming. T-minus 13 minutes. The words come across the inside of my helmet. There's more, but Seven is in the way, purring gently. And anyway, trying to focus on the glowing letters makes the pain behind my right eye worse. My head pulls to the left of its own volition, the way it does when I've got a migraine, and I get even more of Seven's fur in my nose. They're probably all ruined, but I disable security countermeasures and watch the slow ballet of planets through the viewport while I wait, trying to ignore the ache in my head. The speckled purple planet in the middle drifts out of sync with the others, and for a second I'm sure it's telling me to run. An echoing doos sounds through the ship, and my heart rate spikes so high that my head-up display flashes a warning, as though a pulsing red exclamation mark is going to help me relax. I hear the sound of cutters working on the hull, with the docking mechanism trashed. They have to cut their way in. This will play out in one of two ways. Either it's a legit rescue, or they're leeching me. They'll pull away with a circular chunk of my hull, spilling my remaining atmosphere into the void. Then they'll wait until suffocation or the cold kills me. I leave the cockpit, headed for the sound of their cutters, stopping in the armory on the way through. The klaxon sounds, and my heart jumps again. I'm just waiting for the hull to be cut away and reveal the depths of space beyond. Instead, it splits down the middle, and I see the external door of the other ship. The light over the airlock starts spinning, and as I watch it, I try to calm my breathing so it matches the cycle of its spin. Inhale, two full rotations. Exhale, two full rotations. The panel beside the airlock pings and turns green, and the door opens silently. The woman standing in the doorway is tall and broad, held upright by her ship's gravity, while I'm stuck floating. She's the palest person I've seen in a long time, so pale her blonde hair might actually be natural. It's cropped military short under the helmet of her suit, and her back is proper rigid. Her silhouette is made even larger by the fierce-looking combat exoskeleton bolted to her limbs and torso.
"You alone?" she asks.
Her voice sounds tinny over the thin-band universal comms. The scattergun in her hands looks even more dangerous than she does. She could have bought a waver, a tight-beam neutron blast that destroys organic matter, and not much else. But I figure the heavy weaponry is a message. She's telling me she's only there because they're legally required to respond to a distress beacon. If I want to mess about, she'll have no qualms putting me down.
"Just me and Seven," I say.
She looks at me quizzically, and Seven yawns and stretches inside my helmet. If I hadn't just danced with that bounty hunter, I'd twist her exoskeleton into a pretty figurehead for the front of her ship. But I can barely keep both eyes open with the pain in my head.
"I need a retinal scan before I let you on board," she says.
That's when I notice the drone hovering over her shoulder, a lensed metal ball, the air surrounding it distorted by its miniature propulsion drive.
"I don't think you should do that. Rather I leave you here, because that's the only other option."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?